This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. How is everybody? Hey, I want to thank you, all of you, for sending me your comments and your well wishes. I really, really appreciate it. And I love getting your questions. And questions are great for me to be able to discuss on Layla Weighs In. It's also good newsletter material for me to write about. And for those of you who don't know that we have a newsletter, we have the Intelligent Medicine newsletter. You can sign up by going to drhoffman.com, and it's up on the upper right-hand side. You can unsubscribe at any time if you no longer wish to receive the newsletter. Our subscription base has been growing leaps and bounds, and we're very, very happy about that. Today, I want to talk to you about the condition of hypothyroidism. Hypothyroidism. We see this becoming more and more common, or maybe, you know, we're just seeing it here at our practice at the Hoffman Center. And usually we see two types of hypothyroidism presenting. And one is your regular low thyroid function, which is classic hypothyroidism. But of that, and that's about 20% of the population or so, okay? And the other condition of hypothyroidism is the autoimmune hypothyroidism called Hashimoto's. Now, the thyroid gland, it is central to our metabolism. And the major role of the thyroid is to produce thyroid hormones, to control our metabolic rate. All of this is controlled via the hypothalamus, pituitary, all of that. Hypothyroidism, or underactive thyroid, is often undiagnosed. And it's estimated that about 20% of the population has undiagnosed thyroid problems. And of that 20%, Hashimoto's, the autoimmune thyroiditis, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune condition that results in the destruction of the thyroid gland, which then leads to hypothyroidism. Hashimoto's is the most frequently occurring, and its estimated prevalence is between 12 and 26% in the general population. And in the United States, it accounts for 90% or so of the cases. Now, you're probably saying, well, how do I know if I have hypothyroidism? Or how do I, you know, what are the symptoms? Let's run through the symptoms a little bit. Classic low thyroid symptoms, and many of you who are listening have read many of our newsletter articles about hypothyroidism and questions related to hypothyroidism in our newsletter. The classic symptoms can include cold intolerance, fatigue, unexplained weight gain, hair loss, hair shedding from, you know, from the top of your head. Constipation is a frequent occurrence with hypothyroidism. And when I'm saying hypothyroidism now, I'm also talking about Hashimoto's, because these are both about underactive thyroid, Hashimoto's being the autoimmune thyroiditis. A loss of the outer third of the eyebrow. Take a look at your eyebrows in the mirror. And notice if the outer third of your eyebrow, you know, the area closest to your temple, if there's any hair going missing there. So that could be another clue. Some of the symptoms. Some people have sometimes, especially in Hashimoto's, may have a rush of hyperthyroidism. This can bring on symptoms like palpitations, anxiety, irritability, and often that rush of thyroid is transient. It doesn't last long. And what's happening is there's a flood of thyroid hormones into the bloodstream. And that is secondary actually to the breakdown of thyroid tissue. There are other symptoms, especially associated with hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's. Gastrointestinal distress. Some people complain of irritable bowel syndrome. Some people have GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease. Others have diarrhea, yet others have constipation, bloating, allergies, adrenal fatigue. Our adrenal function and our thyroid are intimately connected via the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. Also, nutrient deficiencies are also experienced, and nutrient deficiencies can also be a prerequisite for underactive thyroid. Who is at risk for low thyroid or hypothyroidism? Well, women who are in perimenopause or approaching menopause or even past menopause, things change with those shifts in hormones, and sometimes the thyroid is affected. Coming back to nutrient deficiency, if you have low iron, if you're anemic, you need iron to help support thyroid. A better marker is your ferritin level, and ferritin is the storage form of iron. You want to make sure you have enough storage of iron, and you need a ferritin of at least 70, around 70 to 90, for proper thyroid function. So for those of you who are low in iron, are avoiding iron-containing foods, are vegetarian, are vegan, you may be at risk for hypothyroidism because of your low iron status. Those also, vegans or vegetarians who may be using soy, or even omnivores, carnivores who also use soy. Soy is probably the biggest goitrogen. A goitrogen is something that may induce goiter in the thyroid. Actually, goitrogens are foods or other compounds that can inhibit the production of thyroid hormone. And how goitrogens do that is by, first of all, iodine is food for the thyroid. And what soy can do as the most common goitrogen is inhibit the uptake of iodine by the thyroid. The thyroid needs iodine to produce thyroid hormones, T4, T3, all of those. Getting back to symptoms of low thyroid. People with Hashimoto's, besides having possible anxiety, distress, irritability, even OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and all of those. So normally when you go to the doctor and they test your thyroid, all they're really testing is TSH, and that's called thyroid stimulating hormone. And as long as they see that to be in the normal range, they really don't test for anything else. But really, you want to get T4, T3 levels tested, unbound T4 and T3 levels, to see what may be going on there. But even those levels may be within normal limits, may be high or low. You don't actually know you have autoimmune thyroiditis or Hashimoto's thyroiditis until you're tested for thyroid antibodies. These are thyroid peroxidase antibodies, that's TPO, thyroid peroxidase antibodies, or thyroglobulin antibodies. These are the primary two anti-thyroid antibodies, which if you have them, can bring you a diagnosis of Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Okay. So, what can cause these antibodies to go up? Well, in the case of autoimmunity, you've heard me say before, if you're a listener to these podcasts, that the gold standard in nutrition to treat any autoimmune condition is the removal of gluten and casein. Casein is dairy. And in the case of autoimmune thyroiditis, a gluten-free diet can decrease antithyroid antibodies. And it is thought that people with autoimmune diseases such as Hashimoto's have a more permeable intestine or a leaky gut, and that gluten and or other undigested substances are leaking into the bloodstream and causing autoimmunity through molecular mimicry. The immune system is reacting or overreacting and is targeting, in Hashimoto's, the thyroid gland and destroying it and causing hypothyroidism. There was an Italian study some years ago that found that individuals with gluten allergy also developed significant allergy to their own thyroids. Imagine. But when they eliminated gluten from their diets, that thyroid allergy would disappear. So there you go. It may be as simple as removing gluten and dairy. I have to tell you, in my own experience here, with our Hashimoto's patients, we put them on an autoimmune diet with removing gluten and dairy and any suspect food allergies, or even going all the way to paleo, and those thyroid antibodies come down. You want to see those numbers come down, because that means your immune system is reacting less and less and less in destroying thyroid tissue. Okay? So, checking thyroid antibody levels is the only way to determine if you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. How else can we support? Hey, why else is regular old hypothyroidism happening? Fluoride. We know that fluoride at low levels can disrupt thyroid function, and this is according to a 2006 report from the National Research Council. Fluoride can accumulate in the thyroid and produces all these changes. And animal experiments have shown us that high fluoride intake can reduce thyroid hormone levels, that's T3 and T4, and increases thyroid-stimulating hormone. Fluoride has adverse endocrine effects, and thyroid dysfunction will increase the risk of heart disease, cognitive dysfunction, depression, bone demineralization. Okay? So, where are we getting fluoride? It's in our water systems, right? It's in our toothpaste. You have the control over what kind of toothpaste you're going to use. Use one without fluoride. Why else might hypothyroidism be happening? Toxic substances, you know, in our environment would definitely be a cause of that. And people, as I said earlier, vegan, vegetarian diets, people with eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, talk about confusing the thyroid gland. Mother Nature wants you to survive. If you're not going to get enough calories in you and macronutrients in you, your thyroid function will eventually become depressed. And this in and of itself can lead to subclinical hypothyroidism and full-blown hypothyroidism. Okay? So what do we have to address with hypothyroidism besides getting the proper testing? I've gone over the symptoms with you. And you must know that autoimmune thyroiditis, Hashimoto's, can take as much as a decade before you actually see thyroid antibodies. So changes in TSH, thyroid-stimulating hormone, should be monitored. T3 and T4 should be monitored. Now, reference ranges, unfortunately, have not really changed on a lot of labs. They will still say, "Oh, you know, if you have a TSH of 3.5, it's still within the normal range." You know, it's not true. Let me explain. A diagnosis of hypothyroidism can be very difficult to obtain for this reason, because mainstream physicians rely on these blood tests using outdated reference ranges. So the combination of moderately elevated TSH with normal free thyroxine can actually define some subclinical, you know, not yet on the horizon, hypothyroidism. And that can eventually evolve to overt hypothyroidism, and especially in individuals with antithyroid antibodies. Now, back in 2001, the American Association of Endocrinologists announced that any TSH score above 3 be considered an indication of probable hypothyroidism. My question to you and physicians out there, we need to take, why isn't this being taken into consideration? Because I have a lot of patients and clients come in here and show me their TSH is a 3 or a 4, and their doctors told them, it's fine, you're fine. But they're not. So the ideal TSH score should actually optimally be between 1 and 2. As a matter of fact, it's reported in a survey of over 2,000 people with Hashimoto's, the majority reported feeling best with a TSH under 2, but optimally between 1 and 2. When we're going under 1, it might be a little too much effect on the thyroid. Okay. So pay attention to symptoms like constipation, chilliness, you're intolerant of the cold, you never were before, you're wearing a sweater when nobody else requires a sweater, depression, severe PMS may be another symptom, dry skin, thinning hair, losing the outer third of your eyebrows, infertility and miscarriage is often a symptom of underactive thyroid. If you have a hard time getting started in the morning, unexplained weight gain, look, we could put you on the best diet in the world, or you could be on a very low calorie diet, and if you're still not losing weight, your thyroid needs to be evaluated. So it doesn't have to be a lifelong struggle. How do we support our thyroids? You want to remove the goitrogens. Soy is a big one. Millet is another one. Millet, oh no! Millet is a gluten-free grain that I'm consuming a lot of because I'm on a gluten-free diet, right? Well, millet is also a goitrogen, so you might want to nix that one. In addition, there are plants of the Brassica family, the genus Brassica family of vegetables, and they include kale, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, rutabaga, watercress, cauliflower, broccoli, kohlrabi. But wait, these are the very nutritious crucifers and I need to have them in my diet and I have them in my smoothies every day. Well, guess what? You shouldn't have that kale smoothie every day if you have hypothyroidism. However, all of these vegetables that I just mentioned to you, simply cooking them can rid them of their goitrogenic potential. So cooking them and eating them that way rather than consuming them in their raw state, you know, your kale smoothie, your raw broccoli thrown in your salad every day, cooking these vegetables is actually better for somebody with hypothyroidism, because certainly we want to be consuming these vegetables on at least an almost daily basis besides salads and other vegetables like, you know, your string beans and your asparagus and your peppers and your tomatoes and all the other vegetables, your dark greens like chard, for instance. So, again, another example of one diet does not fit all. You want to cook. If you're at risk for hypothyroidism, you have hypothyroidism, you have Hashimoto's, eat these vegetables, absolutely. Cook them most of the time. That's going to be much, much better. Okay. What else do we need to support our thyroids? The proper maintenance of thyroid hormones is contingent upon adequate intake of protein. And I'm talking about high biological value protein. Your meat, your poultry, your seafood, your eggs are the best sources of high biological value protein. So, you know, when we don't get enough essential amino acids, this can suppress thyroid function and metabolism. So, underactive thyroid is supported this way. The other thing is a lot of these high biological value protein sources give us the necessary nutrients, such as selenium, such as zinc. All right? Add to that some coconut oil, some fish oil, a well-rounded multi-like foundation. By the way, people with hypothyroidism do very, very well on iodine, taking kelp supplements. However, I want to be very, very clear here. Those with autoimmune thyroiditis, with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, iodine does not correlate with Hashimoto's. It does not correlate with iodine deficiency. And in the setting of Hashimoto's, iodine excess has been recognized as a trigger. I've seen this happen in real life with a couple of patients who on their own with Hashimoto's took iodine and they reacted very, very badly. So taking iodine for Hashimoto's is never recommended. Taking some iodine for your regular hypothyroidism, the non-autoimmune hypothyroidism, can be recommended, but it's best to get tested. There's a urine test we do here for iodine to see if you have adequate levels. People also need, who are at risk for hypothyroidism or have it, or are suspected of having it, they should be tested for vitamins, B vitamins, zinc. If you have a low zinc, iron levels, as I said before, you want to make sure you have a ferritin of at least 70 to support your thyroid. Selenium, 3 Brazil nuts a day can take care of that problem for you. Adequate vitamin D levels, adequate vitamin B12 as well. These are all very, very important for hypothyroidism. Really, this is just the tip of the iceberg, so I may have to revisit hypothyroidism again with you because I could talk about this one for hours, but I thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.